everybody, and welcome to another episode of Let's Get Pixelated, the Pixel Enemy Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Esposito, and this is the episode for March 10th, 2013. It was bound to happen sooner or later, but as our new editorial writer said, we have the Avengers assembling for this podcast today. So, we're going to start with Playboy billionaire philanthropist Alex Martinet.
Well, hopefully my phone works. He's like, I can barely hear you, but yeah.
Then we have the Black Widow himself, William Pellegrin.
My hair flows so amazingly.
Then we have the newest editorial writer, Nathaniel Rice, as the captain himself, the Winter Soldier. How you doing today, Nathan?
Good, man. It's snowing here in Colorado, so that's appropriate.
Yeah, oh, it's snowing there in Colorado, if you know what I mean, guys. Marijuana's legal there.
Right?
And then, rounding it out, what? I made it some joke about his flowing golden locks that he wish he has. It's the Teach, Rob Newberry.
How's it going? It's a nice sunny day in Singapore.
Okay, so it was a great week in the gaming industry. Lots of new releases came out, some good, some bad. We're going to get to all of them, but first we're going to go around the horn and talk about what games have we been playing. I'm going to start with Black Widow himself, William Pellegrin. What have you been up to, big guy?
Okay, let's try this again. I turned on my 360 for the first time in weeks, and the first game I plugged in was Alan Wake. Now, I know it's an old game, but I have two reasons. One, I'm broke, so I can't get any new game right now, and two, it's just so much fun. I love it.
It is a fantastic game, underrated, and you know, we're all writers here too, so we can really appreciate the writer aesthetic that is in the story of Alan Wake. Now I have a question for you, Will. Have you gotten a chance to play Alan Wake American Nightmare DLC?
No. That sounds so familiar. No, I haven't played it yet, though I have gotten all the DLC for the original Alan Wake, but I've never really gone through American Nightmare. It seems different only because it's not like Alan Wake. It's like a, I don't know, it feels more like a shoot 'em up than an actual Alan Wake title, but I guess that's what they were going with it.
No, it continues the gameplay, like the whole you have to shine your light on them to, you know, it's the same gameplay mechanics, but it feels like an episode of the Twilight Zone. And the really, really scary and ironic thing is the story of that is you replay the same thing like 5 times, and like that something, like one hell. Thing different changes every time you go through the story.
Oh, so, that sounds like hell.
This sounds like the beginning of this podcast is what it sounds like. Alan Wake American Nightmare. Oh, no. Not playing Alan Wake American Nightmare, but playing Alan Wake.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much. And, and since I got myself a Nexus 7 today, I was playing Shadowgun.
Okay, yeah. There are some good-looking games on, like, iOS and Android platform. I mean, like, obviously they're not console-quality games, but... How do you feel like playing like a third-person shooter on a tablet, like with the touch controls?
It's finicky, only because you don't have the actual physical analog controls, which is always an adjustment for anyone to make. But I made the adjustment perfectly fine. Like, I don't whine about it that much. It plays well. It looks good. That's pretty much all I can ask for.
Perfect. Okay, next we'll move on to the Teach. What have you been up to?
You know what I've been doing, and this is really not my style at all, but I've been actually playing I've been playing Borderlands 2. But what I've been doing is I've been farming for all these legendary weapons. You know, there's the downloadable content. Was it the pirate booty, like Captain Scarlet's pirate booty? Mm-hmm. I saw this video on YouTube where it shows you there's this glitch that you can go and you can just farm all these weapons. So I thought, it's not my style. I don't cheat in games. I never cheat in games. I don't use cheat codes or anything like that. But because I've played 100 hours of this game, I figured might as well just just do some of this stuff. And so I've been using, like, sort of exploiting this glitch. So every day I've been going, like, in the morning and like going and doing this farming thing like 4 or 5 times. So I've got all these legendary weapons now. I've got about $500,000, which isn't a lot of money yet because I know people have got millions. But yeah, I this is like my new addiction.
Did you get a chance to see the trailer for the potentially They might be adding a new Vault Hunter class, like a melee-based one for that game. So it's all, like, you know, up close and personal, punching the crap out of bandits.
Yeah, I saw it. It looks good. I mean, as I said, I haven't been disappointed at all with the DLC yet for Borderlands, and I doubt that I will because it looks great. I mean, I've got the season pass, so it'll come anyway. But it looks like a lot of fun. I mean, everything they've come up with has been great. So
yeah. I mean, we discussed last week, Borderlands 2 was like one of the best games from last year, and it's so good that they're continuing to keep updating it and adding new content and DLC that keeps players like you in there, in the world of Pandora, which is really cool. So anything else besides Borderlands 2, or just rocking through that?
Borderlands 2, been playing some Crysis 3, just kind of going through. It's been a busy week this week, but yeah, I've been playing a bit of Crysis 3, and I started off in the cave. I finally got into the cave, finally, so yeah.
It's so good. How are you liking Crysis 3? I know last week we talked about it, and you're only like 5 minutes in, you got a few Hellas, Let's Wake Up Prophet. How are you liking it now?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a nice, I mean, it's a beautiful game. I've always liked I like them all in the series. We've talked about this before, but the first two were great. I played them all the way through, and this one looks fun. I mean, I really like the series, so yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting more into it.
Are you going through the cave by yourself, or do you have anybody else playing it with you?
No, it's just single player. Yeah, none of my friends have it. Nobody else, like, right now that I know is.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's interesting to play it differently, like, by yourself, and then playing it with other people. Like, I remember when I played it with two other people in my room, it was just calamity. Because, A, they're not really quote-unquote gamers, whatever, take that term, whatever it means, but, you know, just, like, them trying to, like, figure out the puzzles. I was like, when you've been playing games for as long as I have, sometimes puzzles just come to you, and there's some cool puzzles in there, and it's a good game, and
sure.
Again, the thing where they put 7 characters in there kind of irks me, because you technically have to play through the game 3 times to see everybody's story, because you get 3 characters at a time.
Yeah.
So, that's a little irksome. So, The Cave, Crysis 2, and Borderlands 2.
Oh, Crysis 3,
Crysis 3, excuse me.
Borderlands 2. Yeah.
Perfect. Alex, what have you been up to last week, playing any games?
Well, I've been playing a lot of SimCity.
Oh.
And,
SimCity. Yeah.
Well, let me, go back and explain this. I got my code for SimCity the weekend before it released, so I was able to actually play.
Yeah, it was playable then.
Yeah, so apparently, there's a lot of fuzzy rumors about how, the servers have actually crashed, because I'm sure we're going to talk about this, but...
Oh, yeah, we will.
Apparently, you couldn't download the game beforehand, and, that's how Steam...
Yeah, come on, 2013. Get on it, Origin. No preload system?
But yeah, my point is that, many people who have had, a previous, version of the game didn't have that problem. Or had that problem. So I was actually able to play 50 hours in, no problems, no server issues. Even though I will say that many of the issues that I did have with the previous build were still in the full version. I would still have loading issues, I would still have just those little quirks.
Yeah, but, sure.
But overall it's a really good game that is dragged down by its DRM. And I have to review that tonight, and I'm just I'm not too sure what I'm going to do it, or what score I'm going to give. I'm just but I played the original SimCity, or not the original SimCity. My first SimCity was SimCity 4.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really good. It's a really good game. It's one of those games you're going to be thinking is DRM ever going to be part of video games? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll get into the DRM topic in our main topic, along with more of the SimCity disaster-ish launch. But I do want to ask you about the game SimCity, because I've been playing it this week too. Now, previous SimCity games, I loved SimCity because I was able to do what I wanted and make the city that I wanted. So, I used to make gigantic cities with suburban areas in one place, metro areas in the other, and then, a big city in the middle. This one, you're limited to small, they limit the size to pretty small cities, and then you have to connect them to other cities in your region. Hypothetically, played by other players across the world because they're really pushing a multiplayer emphasis. Now, in SimCity 4, you were able to build expansive cities. Like, do you feel that it's a little more limiting?
I still think you can build an expansive city. It's just that I feel that you're limited of how far or
what's the max goal, because, like, when you open up and you look at whenever you get a reviewed game, you always get, like, this worksheet. It's like, here's the best things to do. And I feel like it's easier, and I actually feel like it's more guided in a way for you to get that now. It took me about I've had my city burned down, like, 3 or 4 times before I actually understood, like, how the mechanics were in this version. But over time, you understand that, like, you can't really, like, have everything in one city. You have to have your residential zone, you have to have a residential city, and then you have to move over to another neighbor's city and then build all your industry there so your workers can commute, which is, like, the biggest gameplay fix. It's, like, your workers can commute to city so they can shop to city, and then, like, you have to make sure that your game is mostly about, like, if you want to have, like, a tourist city, like, you want to have, like, skyscrapers. You have, like, a city that's dedicated to that. You can't have, like, your town hall having all the facilities, which is kind of where the hardcore and the casual are kind of like, it's kind of like, do they like it or do they not? I mean, I like the Switch, but it's really hard to tell because, like, on Friday I couldn't play, and then on Saturday I was having issues. So it's interesting to see, like, how this game's going to shape over time, because just the DRM issue is just, like, the major thing that's holding up this game from being, like, a 10, from which it could be, but right now it's not.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I'm kind of on the other side of the fence with the whole multiple city thing, because I just want one ginormous city. Like, I want, like I said earlier, a residential area, and then, you know, make a highway, get off the highway, there's a big metroplex area, my town hall's there, but now I can only make a finite city, and then I have to link it to another city. Like, when I was playing, I was doing review service, too, and one of my other friends who was reviewing it, he had a city, and basically the whole goal of his city was to filter water into my city, which is cool. Like, it's a cool, you know, like, I'd focus on a resource in my city and ship it to him. He'd focus one on his city and filter me. I mean, that stuff's cool, but again, I just want, like, a gigantic city.
The main problem is that, like, when I was on the pre-lease build, like, I was with, like, the people I didn't know who, so, like, I was trying to take their energy, and over time, like, I would depend so much on their energy that the second they cut it off, my entire city just basically just got drained. Like, I could not function without it.
That's another problem, is in the fact that this game is so easy to troll people with. Like, because there's unless you're playing on a private server so you can invite people that you want to play with, if you're on a public server, I can just go into your city and do shit. Just, like, be like, ha, I'm going to bleed his city out, not give him any resources, screw this guy.
Actually, I don't think you can do that to the extent, like, you have to, like, okay, so if you give your neighborhood city, owner permission to do that, then it's your all fucking fault. But but you don't have, like, the free will just to walk in and be like God. You have to give whoever's that permission the power to do that.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying more along the lines of if you play on a public server, there's no way to kick somebody off. So if it's a three city region and you're playing in one city and then I plop into the other city, I play it for 2 days and then I don't play it anymore. There's no way for you to kick me out. So my city is just sitting there and it's not helping you, and you can't do anything. There is a way to abandon a city, but you as the player can't do that. The person that owns that city has to do that.
So yeah, that's another fundamental flaw in the game.
Yeah, I think so too. But again, I don't think it's a bad game. I just think with the launch, Miriam and some stuff, another plus side about it is the fact that the road system's a lot better and everything travels through roads. Because if you played previous SimCity games, if you wanted to do electricity and water, you had to do it separately from that, from roads and stuff. But now the road system's super nice.
But see, that like that's all great, but like the biggest flaw the game has, it's not even the DRM, it's the tutorial feature.
The tutorial is pretty bad.
Yeah, like no matter what, like even though the DRM is like it is, it just breaks the game. Like as someone who hasn't played SimCity 4 in probably 6 to 7 years, I still consider myself somebody who knows SimCity, like knows that you need a residential zone, someone who knows all these little things. But if I was somebody who didn't know SimCity and like saw this on TV, was like, oh, I want this game, there would be no fucking way that I would be able to, you know, pick up the concept, because like my girlfriend and I was like, she was trying to figure out how to build a city, and she was just like so complex because the interface is so like,
it's not good.
I don't want to say it's not intuitive, but it's definitely clunky. Not the best. It's clunky because if you want to upgrade, let's say that you wanted to make a Las Vegas, for example, like you would have to make sure that from the day one, even day one, you have to build a highway you have to make sure your roads are big enough and able to withstand that much traffic. And even they don't even explain the whole commuting to city to city.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that is like the biggest flaw right now. It's like, you don't, like the tutorial, like it should be like the biggest thing that they should have focused on. But it just feels like, hey, these are all the new things we put in. Hopefully you played the last, what, 6 SimCities?
Yeah.
But hopefully, like, it's a really pleasing game. I really do like it. But damn, like, there's so many problems with it that
Yeah, I'm just waiting for them to bring Sim Tower and Sim Ant back. Once they make sequels to those two games, everything's fine. So SimCity, anything else you've been playing this week?
Well, I got another copy of I had to review MLB The Show 13.
Ooh.
And it's what you expect. It's the best baseball game. It's almost probably going to be one of the better baseball sports games out there. But
in your opinion, is The Show franchise better than the 2K?
Oh yeah.
2K basketball or 2K baseball?
Baseball.
But you know, like I think it's a really good game. It's just it's series fatigue because MLB The Show is still this MLB The Show. It's basically all the same. I love the basketball series, if there was ever like, I'm not a baseball fan, so if somebody's a baseball fan, like you have to pick this up. But the biggest problem with it is that like they advertise the PS Vita version as cross platform, which really it isn't. Because the only cross-platform play is the Home Run Derby, not The Show or Road to the Show, which is by far the only reason you need to pick it. Well, not the only reason, but one of the best reasons to pick up the series, because it's so like in depth with the gameplay that you can just be sucked in. Like I could see somebody like just be playing the PS. Like this is one of the games you should be able to pick up on the PS Vita, which I am a PS Vita owner, one of the few, but.
Yeah,
but for me, that's like, I wish the PlayStation Vita version was better in graphics and better just in cross-platform play, but the PS3 version is like, it's like the proper send-off to the PlayStation 4 that you kind of see.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I love baseball, but you can't win them all. I'm a Mets fan, so you can't win half of them.
Oh. Yeah, a lot of people were complaining about the baseball games this year. They're saying that MLB is at 2K, I guess, or 2K13, that it just came out for consoles. Yeah. There's no PC release this year.
Yeah, there's a great article on Kotaku, I think it's Owen Wilson, that like basically ripped the head off of 2K Baseball this year, where it's basically he said that like, I played it for like an hour or two, because like, I had a friend who works for it, but like, they had Justin Verlander for 2K12 last year, and since... who is it? David Price, the cover athlete this year. They just took the MVP that he's not the MVP for just David Price and just tagged it onto him because it was easier. And that's like the whole dynamic. You could just see that they just copied and pasted plus a new couple of roster players and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. For baseball games, I've always leaned toward the more arcadey baseball games. So like Slugfest was a great game. Even Mario Baseball for the GameCube was fun. But more for, like, basketball and Madden and golf, I lean for, like, the more... And FIFA, I lean towards the more realistic simulators. But for some reason, like, I'm more of a big fan of, like, those over-the-top baseball games. I don't know why. Maybe just because
baseball... Did anybody play NFL Blitz?
Yeah, NFL Blitz is a great game, too.
I played Blitz the League.
Blitz the League. That's still, like, a great game.
Oh, so
they had some interesting stuff in there, like, just... Your players hurt. Oh, give them steroids. Go back in.
That has like one of the best. I want to say that doesn't have like one of the best physics engines, but it's like Midway who made the game. But you can see how Mortal Kombat just stole the living crap out of the X Factor, where you can basically break.
Yeah.
I have a vivid memory of breaking someone's brain in that game. That's how insane that was.
Oh, it was cool. Okay, Nathan. What have you been playing this week?
I have been super busy, so I haven't really been able to play games as much as I'd like, but I got Left 4 Dead 2 on the 360 because it went on sale for like $10.
That's a great game. Up and,
yeah, I'm like kind of sad that I've waited this long to try it out, but it's like one of the best co-op games that I can remember playing, honestly. So,
yeah, it's great. It's a really great game.
Yeah. So
we play. We play with our students. Yeah, I play with my students sometimes. We go. One time it was teachers versus students, and so you play. So we were playing the infected, and some of the students were playing, and they just killed us. There was no competition at all.
Yeah, it's like such a deep game. Like I didn't realize as far as like the versus mode goes and stuff. Like there's so much strategy in. So, and I really like that, so I'm enjoying that, and I've been playing some Bad Company 2 still.
That's a great game, too. I hope they make a Bad Company 3 eventually. It's like the story in those.
Yeah, I'd rather them make Bad Company 3 than Battlefield 4, honestly.
Like, yeah, but we're in the minority. I mean, I'm sure there are people that want a Bad Company 3, but the people that want a Battlefield 4 outweigh us, probably 4-1.
And, like, since I don't have, like, a good gaming PC, like, and Bad Company was kind of more geared toward consoles, like, I don't know, I just like it a lot more, but that's me.
For sure. A good thing about going back for Left 4 Dead 2, it's just, for some reason, the community in Valve games are, like, so interesting. I remember I hopped onto a Left 4 Dead 2 game, and I just joined, like, a random 4. And we're on chapter 5. Like, if you guys don't know, the scenarios are broken up into chapters. And like the last one is always usually like hold out till time gets here, like till help gets here or something like that. Yeah. And we were playing, so we're waiting for this helicopter to land, and everything's fine. And then the helicopter lands, and this one guy in our group, just like all of a sudden took out a shotgun, shot us all. And then he hadn't talked the whole game. He gets on the mic and he goes, "I'm sorry." And then he just gets in the helicopter and leaves. I was like, "What?" I was like, "What is this?" Like, I mean, it's stuff like that that makes video games awesome, especially multiplayer games.
Yep.
I mean, it's really cool. So, Left 4 Dead 2, Battlefield Bad Company 2. That's what you've been hitting up this week.
Pretty much, and then, like, I've been, I'm trying to get through GTA 4, like, I bought it, like, on release date back in the day, and I never finished it, and I'm super excited about GTA 5, so I'm trying to, like, finish GTA 4 just to, you know,
feel like I'm talking into the past, like, Nathan, are you in 2010 right now?
I'm not really excited about any games that have been coming out recently. Like, GTA 5 and Bioshock Infinite is, like, pretty much all I'm looking forward to, honestly, but...
Yeah, Infinite's gonna
be good. I'm getting Bioshock next week, so...
Infinite's gonna be
good. Nice. Oh my god, I can't wait for it.
It's gonna be really, really good. Echoing you guys, I played through the new Tomb Raider, which was a fantastic reboot origin story for Lara. At some points, it felt a little Uncharted-y, if that's a neologism I just made up, where, you know, it's just like, I'm going to walk across this bridge. Oh, shit, this bridge is collapsing, explosions everywhere. That happened quite a bunch. And nothing is ever stable in that game. So she'll just be walking, and it's like, oh, I just fell through this, and Spike went through my leg. You know, she's a very resilient person. But they grounded her, and they made her more humanistic than the original Laura. So that was really cool. And the story's okay, and they have some fan service nods. And it's pretty long, too, which was nice, because I beat a lot of games quickly, so it was great to see that. And it was just a good game. Overall, a great game. Everybody should check it out.
Yeah.
I played through...
But, like, one of the... Oh, yeah, go. Let me ask you real fast. Like, I haven't played Tomb Raider, but, like, one of the complaints about it is that after Lara Croft kills her first person, she just starts to become, like, a mercenary. Like, how do you feel about that? Like, how do you like the story after, like, it picks up after in the middle?
You know, that's a really interesting question and topic, because it walks the fine line of how can video games do that. I don't think, throughout the game, she does still feel humanistic. Like, she'll be sad of what she's doing, but to your point, it's, I kill 50 bad guys, and then a cutscene, one of my friends dies, and she's, like, so devastated. I'm like, dude, I just killed 50 people. Why am I devastated now? Because it's somebody I like. So, I don't want to say that... We were talking about the same subject last week when I just started playing Tomb Raider, and I used Far Cry 3 as an example. Like, in Far Cry 3, halfway through that game, you are just a murderer. You're a bad guy. You enjoy what you're doing, and you have no holds barred about it. This one isn't so much like that. Like, she still cares what she's doing, but after that first kill and the emotional cutscene, oh my god, I had to kill somebody, it's just, hey, I'm gonna kill people. And, you know, more and more games are becoming self-aware of this, so, like, towards the end of the game, like, the main antagonist of the game's like, you think you're right? How many people have you killed to get to me in this game? I was like, okay, yeah, you're true. That's true. But... again, that's a fine line. Like, you have to build your whole game around character development, and I don't think it would work too well in a AAA title, and I don't think it's done amazingly well. I mean, if you guys can think of an example, hop in, like, where that carries out through the whole game, but more like independent games like The Walking Dead and things like that, because it's a much easier barrier to entry and risk-reward system, because Tomb Raider's, you know... a multi-million dollar project, so they have to appeal to the masses.
Well, yeah, but, like, I don't know. Like, Far Cry tried that, like you said, but, like, it easily ditched that, like, once you got, like, a higher skill. Like, when you started getting all the tattoos, I was like, okay, you have all the weapons now.
Oh, yeah, Will was, last week, you like this? Get another tattoo. You know, kill a guy, get a tattoo. That's what Far Cry 3 was. And I'm okay with that. Far Cry 3 was a fantastic game. One of the best of last year.
So. It was really after you kill the boss. I'm trying to think of what his name is. The guy who says the definition
Voss.
Of the saying.
Oh, yeah, Voss. Voss. He's a good character. Voss.
After you kill him, like, you're basically unlocked. Like, you can basically do anything you want in the world. Which is pretty cool, but it basically changed you from until then.
Yeah, the conceit to that game was a little weird, though, too. Because... the game's broken up into Island and Voss, and then Island and Final Bad Guy / Twisty thing. They had so much potential to make a really good twist for that game, and it didn't go anywhere, which was sad. But after you beat the first half of the game, they basically said, hey, we showed you the whole bag of tricks. Now you can basically... we're going to give you the wingsuit, so you don't have to... do this anymore. We're gonna give you a bad guy costume, so you won't get alerted anymore. So you can basically just walk to the end of the game now, if you want to, or you can go continue collecting animal hides and doing radio towers and stuff. So that was a little interesting, just to see that. Hey, you did this for about 5 or 6 hours in the first island. You don't have to do it for another 5-6 if you don't want to, which was interesting.
The pacing in that game was so weird, but I think going back to talking about, like, you know, being self-aware and all that stuff, I don't think a video game can work where you don't have bad guys to shoot or, you know, stuff to overcome like that. It's just not going to be as fun.
Yeah, well, so. To put it on the contrary, I mean, I said Journey was one of my favorite games from last year, mm-hmm. and there weren't really any quote-unquote bad guys in that game. But yeah, I know what you mean, and it goes back to this... it's called Bildungsroman, or coming-of-age story. Yeah. So if you want to tell that story, it's really hard to do it in a AAA game, especially the, oh, I'm sorry for what I'm doing. Again, we talked about Spec Ops The Line on last week's show, I think it was, and that does a great job of it, because that throughout that whole game, Walker, the main character, is really descending into madness, and you see that both physically and emotionally, and in the voice actor's work. Like, you can hear it in his voice that he's not, you know, he goes from thinking this is right to losing it, which is really cool. But again, it's hard to do in AAA titles. And another thing about the games are, like, you know, if, like, for instance, like, Laura falls, like, from, like, a three-story building and lands on a spike, and then for about 5 minutes after that, it's like a slow limp scene. It's a trade-off balance of, you can't have her limping the whole game, because nobody wants to play a game where it's that slow and you limp the whole game, so you have to... I mean, that would be interesting. That would be really interesting to see a game that, you know, just, like, be into the game, like, a helicopter crashes and you're just, like, super slow limping the whole thing. That would be... It's cool. But Tomb Raider...
And there's a market for that, but, I mean, it's just not... It's not going to sell as much as fall on a spike and then limp for 2 minutes and then go fuck up 15,000 more guys. Like,
lots and lots of quick time events.
Yeah. See, Spec Ops is basically the closest Fight Club story that I've ever played that just basically ripped off that movie. Like, it was essentially Fight Club.
Yeah, well, we were talking about it last week, and it's actually based off of the novella Heart of Darkness.
Yeah, Heart of Darkness.
A lot of people read in high school. It's a good story. Everybody should read it. Which is also the movie Apocalypse Now is what it's based off of. But yeah, Fight mm-hmm. Club 2. I mean, it's just, it's one of those stories, and it does a great job at it. It's really good.
Yeah.
Go.
No, I was going to say, like, The Walking Dead tried to do that, like, but instead of humans, it was all zombies, and zombies were the main threat, but humans were eventually the ones that eventually killed you, no matter what.
Yeah, and that's why I like Walking Dead, because, like, it's like watching a wilderness movie. Yes, there are bears in the woods, but they're not really what you have to worry about. In the end, it's other people, and it's the wilderness that you have to worry about. So in The Walking Dead, yes, there are zombies, but the people are the ones that you should be worried about, because people are bad motherfuckers. They are just not good people. Especially when the world goes to hell, they are not good people. But Tomb Raider, if you want it, buy it. If you like previous Tomb Raiders, buy it, because the only thing is, it's really light on the puzzles, which is one of the staples of the original Tomb Raider games. And she even makes a point when you the best part about the game is whenever you complete one of these optional tombs, it says tomb raided, which is just great, which is just awesome. But she makes a joke. She's like, tombs, I hate tombs. But yeah, there's only like 5 optional tombs, and those are really like mechanical puzzles. So it's like, man, there's a pressure plate here and a heavy box over here. What are you going to do? So it was interesting that. But overall, great game, and you should at least rent it, because it's really good. And the multiplayer is multiplayer. I've also been playing Runner 2, Bit Trip Runner 2, Future Rhythm Alien, Legend of Rhythm, whatever. It's really good. You can check out our review on the site. And they did a good job. Bit Trip 1 was a great game. It's a rhythm-centric side-scroller where you just collect stuff and get through the stage. And then finally, what I played this week, and Alex and I talked about this at the beginning of the week, and I told them that, you know what, I don't think I'm going to play it because I don't want to go back to the universe. But I ended up playing the Mass Effect 3 Citadel DLC.
Oh, okay.
Which is the final piece of DLC that they're going to do for Mass Effect ever, because they're going to reboot, not reboot, but a new story arc for the franchise. But so Alex and I was talking, and I told them that Mass Effect 2 is not only the best game in its trilogy, but it's one of the best games of this generation. And why the DLC worked really well for number 2 was because it all fit into the overall story. So you do this main mission in number 2, and then all this DLC is what happens between 2 and 3 to so much of how 3 begins. But this one is, this final DLC takes place before the last mission of the game. So I've already played the last mission of the game. My ending's played out, characters lived, characters died, but to go back in and, you know, everybody's okay and stuff like that, it was interesting. But I'm glad I did. So I told Alex I didn't want to do it because I didn't want, you know, my story's over. My Shepherd story's done. But I went back and played it, and I'm glad I did because it's just fan service. From the moment you load it up to when the credits roll, it is just, you know, it's a really good, quirky story. All the characters from 1, 2, and 3 are in it, which is awesome because the one thing the Mass Effect universe is great at doing is making some of the most engaging and impactful characters that I've played this generation. So it was great to see all of them come back. The story was great, really sci-fi, enjoyable. And then the last part of the game is about an hour and a half, and all you do is throw a gigantic party. And it's great because all the characters are drunk from the first three games, and you're just talking to all of them, and they're just, like, talking about stuff. And it's, you know, again, it's fan service, and I love that they did it. It's BioWare trying to get on our good side, and I'm glad that when I finally... It's a big book. It's like in a... If this is a book, it's a dictionary, because Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 have just been, you know, part of my gaming lineage. So it's great to finally close that book on a good note and not a sour one. So if you have Mass Effect 3, you might be mad at BioWare for the ending, but 95% of Mass Effect 3 was an incredible game, so get over it. So go check out Citadel DLC. $15, way worth it. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
News.
Okay, so that's what we've been playing. So now we're going to jump over to news. And there was quite a bit of news happening this week. And we're going to start off with Thief 4 being announced. Now, I want to start off by asking Will, are you a Thief? Are you a Thief fan? You ever play any of the Thief's games? Do you like stealth games? Excited for Thief?
I'll be honest. I like stealth games, but I have never played a Thief game in my life.
It was an interesting genre. I remember playing the original Thief games. Thief Deadly Shadows is a great game. But, yeah, Thief 4 was announced. Actually, you know what this would be a good question for? I'm going to jump over to Rob and ask him, because I know Rob liked and just played through Dishonored. So I'm wondering if he's ready to jump back into a stealth genre game this fast.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would, I love Deus Ex. I loved, even in Crysis 3, I play it as stealthy as possible. I'm not really, you know, I don't know how many times I reloaded some things where I was like, okay, I got to do that more quietly, or I don't want to wake these people up, or I don't want to scare them, or whatever it is. So, do you remember an old game? It was an old game. It was called, what was it called? The Operative, No One Lives Forever.
Yeah.
Do you remember that game? Yeah. Where you're like this woman, it was like a James Bond kind of thing. Yep. And you went through the game really stealthily and stuff. I never played number two, but I loved the first one because you you could go through really quietly and not kill anybody, and you had the body remover and stuff. So I really like that in games. I've never actually played a Thief game. I think I played the very first one when it came out a long time ago on an old PC I had. But I haven't. I would play it. I mean, I would play the new one for sure. I mean, why not? It looks interesting, and yeah, I'm always. I mean, I'll try it for sure.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if it sells well, because there are fans of the Thief franchise out, and these, you know, a first-person, like, super stealthy game, people apparently want more of that, because Dishonored sold really well, and a lot of that was because it was a new IP, but it'll be interesting.
Skyrim, that's why I played Skyrim, too.
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah, I went really quietly. Stealth Skyrim. As much as possible, yeah.
Me too. I did the same thing.
You killed a dragon quietly?
I was going to say, that game's even longer if you play.
How is that possible?
You poison the arrows.
Oh.
Just shoot them.
You guys have no idea.
Gently. Okay, next up in news is, last week we talked about probably the worst kept secret in the industry has been Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. Well, trailers have come out, information's come out about it. Real quickly, it's going to be Connor's granddad, Kenny, Edward Kenny, and it's going to take place in the Caribbean, and it's going to have a lot of naval combat. You're going to be able to upgrade your ship and blah, 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 Assassin's Creed. Nathan, are you an Assassin's Creed fan, and what do you think of Assassin's Creed 4?
I'm not an Assassin's Creed fan.
I think the games were like way too easy, and I like more challenge. So that's just me, though. I mean, they're fun to, you know, screw around in, but not the biggest Assassin's Creed fan, no.
No, that's good. I know a lot of people that echo your sentiments of just like, especially after they played number one, because number one is turned a lot of people off to the franchise because it was really repetitive. And I mean, while it was still a great game, especially for its time with how graphically capable it was, you just did the same thing over and over again, you know, like listen to something, pickpocket something, set up for an assassination. So it turned a lot of people off.
Collect the flags.
Yeah, lots of flags. Alex, what about you?
I was an Assassin's Creed fan after 2, and then I liked Brotherhood, but I just didn't like 3. And it is just, I hate to say, but it's too soon to go back to Assassin's Creed. I mean, they should have waited at least a year. I mean, I don't get it why they have to release a yearly edition. I mean, I know it's going to sell guaranteed 4 million, but, like, Watch Dogs is, like, my most anticipated game, and that's from Ubisoft, and, like, I feel like that's hurting that game now. And, yeah, I just don't care about Assassin's Creed 4.
There's already freaking television commercials for it. I was watching TV, and there was a commercial for Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. I was like, am I honestly watching a commercial for this game when Assassin's Creed 3 was launched at the end of October last year? It hasn't even been 6 months. It's absolutely ridiculous.
And the rumors is, it's like, well, it's not rumors, it's fact. It's like, this game's been in development for 2.5 years. That means that, I'm just going to go on a record that says that next year there's probably going to be an Assassin's Creed 5 or whatever subtitle it's going to be called. Ubisoft cannot let this franchise just die.
Now, something that irks me is the fact that it's called Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. I think it's too soon for another numbered entry, but I want to get Will's opinion. Do you think there would be, because there is a lot of backlash, because people are echoing sentiments about how it's too soon for a numbered installment. Do you think there would be less backlash if this game was simply titled Assassin's Creed Black Flag instead of having that 4 in front of it?
Yeah, I think there would actually be a lot less backlash, only because, you know, with the 4 attached to it, you see it as a sequel. So you have, it's added on to Assassin's Creed 3, whereas, let's say, with Assassin's Creed Brotherhood or Assassin's Creed Revelations, it just continued the story for Assassin's Creed 2. But I guess that might be a point of confusion, because if they just made a regular entry, like another, if they just continued Assassin's Creed 3, they would have to literally just have it Assassin's Creed. I don't know what would be a good subtitle for Assassin's Creed 3 for a future entry. I guess what I'm saying is, if they made a new entry, I don't think they could make it not a numbered sequel. They would have to make it a numbered sequel if they want to make a new entry.
I think it could be marketing too, because if you look at games coming out this month, God of War, Ascension, Gears of War, Judgment, they're not doing as well as a numbered series would do.
Right.
So Assassin's Creed sold a shitload. And I think they're looking marketability-wise. Hey, Assassin's Creed 4 is going to sell a lot more than Assassin's Creed subtitled this. Which is disgusting. Screw you, Ubisoft. Just give me Watch_Dogs and make it good. Okay, next bit of news is Dead Space 4, and supposedly the IP has been, story came out from Video Gamer saying that because of the lackluster sales of Dead Space 3, and I mean they were lackluster, they haven't even broken a million, and it, just to put it in perspective, they haven't broken a million since launch, and Tomb Raider broke a million in 48 hours. So they said that the IP's done, they're not going to make an Assassin's, a Dead Space 4. Now, it would be interesting, because then Visceral Games and EA has come out and said, whoa, 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 Video Gamer, why are you making this up? We did not say that, and we are looking to go forward with the Dead Space IP. Now, just a real, real quick rant about Dead Space 3 is, Dead Space 3, I played through it, and the story is laughable. It is atrocious. It's just bad. And it's a shame, too, because I really liked 1 and 2. But then they have the tenacity to... There's new DLC for this game coming out next week, and it's story DLC that happens after the end of the game. So not only was the story god-awful and the ending just horseshit, now they want you to pay $15 on top of that to experience the ending of the Dead Space trilogy, and that just rubs me the wrong way. So screw you, EA. But I just have a question. I'll start. Just ask Rob about this. Feelings on the Dead Space franchise and feelings on the fact that knowing that Dead Space 3 didn't sell well and knowing that it would be going into 4 territory, should the Dead Space franchise be left, you know, given a Viking funeral and just burned out to sea?
It's a funny thing, you know. You have loyal fans and people who love the game, and you want to make your community happy. But you know, like you said, and we've said before, the companies are out to make games, right? I mean, Williams was talking about that last week. You want to make games. You want to make good games. You need funds for that. You can't just go make charity things. So you know, if they put something out and nobody's buying it. I don't know, it kind of says something, right? Maybe there's nothing wrong with creating a new game in the same universe with similar characters or something like that, so it's like almost like a spin-off series, but not necessarily Dead Space. I don't know, it's a tough one, because you want to support, you really want to be like, oh yeah, we know everybody loves the characters and loves the series and stuff like that, but we have to make money too.
For sure. Anybody else want to chime in on Dead Space?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think one of the, well... Another fact is that, like, video gamer, like, Peter Molyneux, Peter Molyneux, basically called out video gamer and basically said the infringement or made up the story about how, Dead Space 3 only sold 1 million units.
Peter Moore,
yeah. I'm like Peter Molyneux.
Molyneux's our bad boy at, the Fable creator.
That's it,
He's still
okay.
Wondering about what's inside the cube. Have you guys heard of Curiosity?
Yeah,
he's still worrying about that. But yeah, Peter Moll crawled them out.
Yeah, but my point is that there's a lot of confusion, and I'm one of those people that didn't even believe the rumor when it first hit the webs. So I still don't think that, like, I think 2 years from now, maybe three, like when there's like Dead Space 3 is not even in the news, and then like during some E3 announcement, they'll be like, you know, they'll bring up the visor and be like, hey, here's Dead Space 4, and people are going to be... Then I'll be like, okay, fine, here it is. I'll jump back in. But, like, it's the same thing what I was saying before about... God, what was I talking about too soon? Assassin's Creed, where I feel like this franchise just needs a ton, just needs to take a break for a second.
Cool down, yeah, I agree.
But I didn't mind Dead Space 3. I thought it was actually pretty good. I guess I'm one of the people.
Again.
I think the word was horseshit.
Okay.
I was like, I didn't think
that.
Dead Space was
horseshit.
It's
not a horrible game. It's not a bad game. If you make a game, I applaud you, and I shouldn't say it's horrible, because there's so much work, so many people put so many blood, sweat, and tears into making a game that it's not good to say that it's horseshit. But it's not it's not terrible. But it was nowhere near 1 and 2. It was just not a very good game.
Let me just ask you, did you play Dead Space 3 with co-op?
No.
Then it is so much better. Like, it is by far, like, it just adds a new dimension to the experience.
I played co-op. I played with a friend through some of the co-op missions, but for the main, like, the main part, I played by myself.
No, it is totally different experience. Like, when you play as Carter, it is a totally different experience.
But then that goes back to the question of, why call it Dead Space? Why is there co-op in my Dead Space? When Dead Space 1 came out, they marketed it as this visceral, no pun intended, experience about, you know, isolation, in space no one can hear you scream, sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star in a little girl voice and scare the crap out of you. 2 added some action. This is just again, going from the opening cutscene of a ship crashing and it's coming down behind you, and it's an action game. It's a third-person action co-op game. EA has another one of these coming out called Army of 2 at the end of the month. You know,
you mean
so
Army
why
3?
Do I, you know, why do I want that in my Dead Space? You know, you got your co-op in my Dead Space.
Yeah, that's the one game I don't care about, but I do think there's way too many enemies, but over, like, when you play as Carter, it is a totally different experience, and it makes Dead Space 3 so much better.
Good. I want it to be better because, again, when you play as Carter, it might explain who Carter is and not just, oh, I just went through this whole game and now Carter's telling me that he's a bad person and he's abandoned his family. I don't know who the fuck you are, Carter.
Spoiler, his family actually died.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was, you see, that's the problem with it. They don't reveal anything about Carter, but they did a comic, they did a graphic novel. His family basically got turned into them, and he had to kill them.
Oh, man. That's original. Yes. Real original.
Shot him right through the head.
Okay, Dead Space 4, 7, eventually it'll come out.
See, the same thing with Aliens Colonial Marines. I mean, everybody crapped on that game and said it was horseshit, but then, you know, the co-op just makes the game totally much better. No, I'm just joking.
Because now everyone can experience the
crappiness. Aliens Marines deserve to get kicked off this podcast.
Oh, you know what's the sad part is I just said that it's not nice to talk about how bad games are because people work on them, but man, Aliens Colonial Marines was a bad game. And they got so many good voice actors from the original game, like movies, to do it too. I mean, they don't care. They just want a paycheck, but I mean, oh, yeah. Man, it was bad. Okay. Next piece of news, we don't really have to talk about it too much because apparently it's been around forever, but Jason West, one of the co-founders of Respawn Entertainment and going back years, one of the co-founders of Infinity Ward, which is now famous for all the Call of Duty games, he left Respawn, and I just say that we don't have to talk about this too much because apparently this has been going on forever. He hasn't been working for the company almost since it was founded. They said it hasn't impacted development on the game, and he just did it for family reasons. So I just want to wish Jason West all the best, a brilliant mind in the industry, and hopefully he comes back. I'm just hoping for a mega team where the BioWare doctors come back, Cliff the Blazinski from Epic, and Jason West just all come back and make a fantastic game. It would never happen. Yeah,
never.
Cliff Blazinski's too busy posting pictures of his girlfriend and his super fancy car that he only drives on Sunday on Twitter. So no, he's a fun guy though. And then this second to last piece of news is I'm gonna let Rob spearhead this one.
Yeah, the whole thing with Anita, what's her name? Sarkeesian. Sarkeesian, yeah. She kickstarted that whole video games and, you know, feminism and video games, and you know, when she first came out with it, she had a ridiculous amount of backlash. I mean, I'm all for people pushing back on ideas, and I think it's important that people challenge and criticize things, but the amount of criticism and the sort of the hostility, I mean, they were making flash games where you could beat up her face, and that, you know, people are still making videos about her, about the greed and all that kind of stuff. She kickstarted the project, was trying to raise $6,000 to put a 5-video series out talking about it. I mean, this is a person who she's pretty well educated as far as I know, too. I mean, she has a blog. She's been doing it for a while. And so she pushed back a little bit on the whole idea, and she got a massive, massive, massive campaign started against her. I mean, it was really, really, it was vile. So she's finally, I mean, a lot of criticism came up. She raised over $120,000, I think. And so she started saying, okay, well, I'll make more than 5. I'll make 12 videos now. And, you know, she had all these extra projects lined up as well. But it took about 9 months for the first video to come out, and then she got criticism for that. People were saying, well, that's ridiculous. Why, who takes 9 months to make a video, blah, blah, blah. So the first video was released about 2 days ago, I think. And I watched it, I mean, I was interested because, I mean, I think that this is the thing about video games. People are really loyal to games, and, you know, it is a fairly male-dominated culture. I think that's fair. When she put the video out, I watched it, and I was really curious to see what she said. And it was actually a pretty good video, and I don't think she's saying anything really new. Yes, the damsel in distress whole idea has been around since the dawn of time. It's an old story. I mean, if I studied religion in university, and, you know, going back to, you know, the Gita and the, you know, the Ramayana and stuff, this is stuff that's been going on for, you know, for thousands of years. So this is nothing new. But she pointed a pretty accusing finger at Nintendo, saying that the whole Super Mario thing and, you know, and Princess Peach, it kind of, you know, solidified it. So the first video came out, seems like it's had a pretty good response so far. It hasn't made a lot of news. Like, I haven't seen a lot of people talking about it. It kind of flew under the radar when the video just came out. I was expecting the whole Twitter and, you know, and Reddit to just take off and, you know, top post kind of stuff, but it didn't really make the big news, and I'm not sure why it didn't, but I'm hoping that people watch it and just listen and say, okay, well, this is not bad. It's not a bad start. We'll see where she goes with it. But Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised that she had such a huge amount of criticism.
I personally don't think it's fair to rip on Super Mario for having a damsel in distress like Peach, because I guess you could argue that, you know, the mentality for video game designers back in the 80s is a lot more different than it is now. So I don't know. I guess it's okay to look at it in a retrospective lens, but I wouldn't rip it too much. I mean, it was 1985, 1986. What I mean, the mentality for women back then is a lot different than it is now. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd like to get Nate's been quiet a little bit, so I don't want to get Nate's whole idea and thoughts on, you know, like feminism in games and, you know, just female culture when it comes to gaming and stuff.
I think, first of all, that all the backlash, and if there's, like, flash games out there where people be like, that's fucking ridiculous, first of all. But I also think that the argument has been made before, and I think, like, in addition to the fact that, you know, Mario was first made back in the 80s or whatever, like, there was no real story in that game. It was save the princess. Like, that's all you need to worry about. And to... like, there's no developed characters, like, you know, nobody talks or whatever. It's just, I think that's kind of weird to call out that game. And I think it goes back to marketing and the video game companies. And, you know, who are these games being targeted toward? They're being targeted toward males. So males are going to be the main characters, like, you know what I mean? And... I don't know, I guess that's just all, that's my basic thoughts on it.
No, I agree. I mean, and if you look at games like Tomb Raider, you know, they try to establish a strong female role, mm-hmm. but it, for some reason, in culture and society today, is when you tie a guy to a chair and punch him in the face repeatedly, it's okay in a game, but if you do that to a girl, it's not good, right? Okay. So a lot of controversy came about when Tomb Raider was first being shown, because there was a potential rape scene or alleged rape scene in the game, and people got up in arms about that. But it's what I just want to ask, like, what is the fine balance of a female character? Because you can have a female character in a game, but if they are like the stereotypical 1980s Bill and Lance shirt off, you know, just guns blazing, Contra-type hero, or do you put... how do you weigh that with a more humanistic, down-to-earth character that you want to care about, and you want to, you know, see these things happen to her because you want it to develop?
We talked about Aliens, Colonial Marines for a little bit, and I just think, like, Aliens, the franchise, like, obviously the main character is a woman, and she's a very strong woman, and, you know, shit happens and she gets shit done and whatever. But I think that the whole feminist argument is, like, they want equality. They want to be equal to men. And if they want to be equal to men, then, you know, if James Bond gets to sit in a chair and gets the shit beat out of him and gets his, you know, balls hit by whatever, like, then, and we don't freak out about it, then we shouldn't be freaking out if it's a woman either, because that's equality. Like, so, I mean, I guess that's all I really have to say about that, but...
It's a funny one, because you... I don't think that... I understand what you're saying. I think the thing is that in history, there's been a tremendous amount of... there's been the sort of the unbalance, right? Like, it hasn't been balanced between dominant male and dominant female. I think that when it comes down to games, it's kind of like the same with books, right? Like, if you read, you can read the Twilight series, and you can just see how miserable these women are portrayed, and you can, some people will read them, and girls read these books and they love them, and, you know, it's the same kind of thing. But I think that they're for a lot of female characters that are sort of, in quotes, powerless, there are a lot of dominant characters as well. There's some very positive characters, the Aliens franchise for sure. I don't think that there's a single woman in the Skyrim universe that is a weak kind of woman. I mean, for the most part, they are tough. You know, like, there's the you know, these really tough warriors, your partner, I forget her name now, Lydia, you know, like, she's the first person that joins you in the companions, yeah. You know, and she's super badass, you know. And there's a lot of dominant characters, Tomb Raider for sure, there's another one. There are all kinds of women. So I think what it comes down to is, if you're going to sort of look accusingly, I think it's also good to recognize, okay, yeah, there have been some real strides that have been taken in the game industry. I think that there are some very dominant characters, and here are some of them as well. And then go back and look at it. I think that I don't know. She's definitely got a bit of an agenda. This Anita woman, she's got a bit of an agenda. She seems to have a bit of a following for her, and she's definitely playing to that market that she's got. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. It'll be interesting to see how the series pans out. I want to be really careful what I say because I don't want to sound like I'm not supporting it. I think it's a great idea. I think that she should get her opinions out there, and people will listen. And yeah, I think everything is everything's got to be balanced. I'm not sure how to find that at this point.
Sure, Alex there or are Will. People...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no! Who's talking? Go for it.
Oh, I was just gonna say. It seems like, and admittedly, I haven't watched this video, and I need to. But it seems like the argument is always so extreme in either one case or the other. And like you said, like the people who are making the argument need to look at Alien or need to look at Tomb Raider and whatnot and not take it to such an extreme level. And yeah, that's all I have to say.
Now, the thing is, though, we are talking about, you know, females in games, and Alien is a great example for movies, but they didn't incorporate another fault of the game is they didn't incorporate it into the game at all. There's actually no female characters in the game.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Because, you know, we talk about how Ripley's such a strong...
There's the pilot in the beginning. That's it.
The pilot in the beginning.
Yeah, the all-important pilot.
Women are redeemed.
In multiplayer, I think, if that counts.
No, I mean, Alex, Will, you want to briefly touch on this?
I mean, I like where she's going. She's analyzing the different types of stereotypes and tropes that females in video games do fall into. And I do believe that for a lot of designers, they really do have to be careful how they portray females in video games. But I'm going to be very careful with what I say here. I feel like every woman in any game fall into any of these categories. I feel like there is no one female that does not fall into any of these. I have to be careful with what I say here, but I understand her agenda, but at the same time I don't get it. It's like if you're going to analyze all these tropes and criticize them, then what would be your prime example of a female that doesn't fall into any of these? And I feel like if she does go about describing that, then I think she's creating a trope in and of itself. So I feel like it's a never ending battle here, because if you say all of a sudden, okay, this is how female characters should be, all of a sudden, in a way, you're creating a trope yourself. And so it's kind of dangerous to tip and toe your way around this, because there's just so much that, you know, any one female character can fall into. And while we're on the subject, what about male characters? They fall into so many ridiculous tropes, it's not even funny. Yeah. I mean, we've seen the male that's a badass. We've seen the male that's taken a step backwards to just not hog the spotlight and be a coward. We've seen those type of tropes, but interestingly, no one has analyzed that. But for females, well, guys, we have to really put this under a light and analyze this carefully.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that she chose to attack Nintendo, who has created quite possibly one of the strongest female characters in games, in Samus.
Right.
From
the Metroid
franchise, which is interesting.
And if you want to talk about a female damsel in distress like Peach, I'm pretty sure she's in Super Smash Brothers.
Well,
she could kick your ass.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, just like everything else in this world, you know, that's why we're so lucky, everything's open to interpretation. So, just like you said, there are so many things you can analyze in the video game industry, and my only thing I have to chime in about this is, if you think something needs to be done, then do it. If you want to see a strong female character, find a way to pitch a strong female character into a game that can do it. It's the same thing as with black characters in video games. There's been a handful of really good black characters in video games.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if you want to see one, you know, talk, make one, you know? I mean, she's not a developer or anything like that, but people get their underwear up in a bunch for, like, some of the craziest stuff. And yes, we talked about it earlier, video gaming is a predominantly male audience, but if you look at the statistics these days, it's the median age is 33 years old, and the skewed numbers are probably about, I think it was like 60-40, or like 55-45 men to women. So there are a lot of women that game. So it's an interesting topic, and one that I'm really excited to see pan out through the rest of her videos.
I just have one more thing to say. I'm not going to rail on her. She's smart. She clearly knows what she's talking about, and she has a level of expertise on this. I guess another point would probably be look at Bioshock Infinite, because I've seen on the forums a lot of people are quick to jump out that one of the main leads of Elizabeth is a damsel in distress, where you know you have Booker who's coming over there to save her. When I don't think that's not fair. I think because Elizabeth in this case, it's not that she's a damsel in distress. It's more like she hasn't seen the world around her, and it's his job to get her out of that enclosed space into the actual world. That's his mission.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think she looks like a strong character, and she is. My two cents, and don't take this with any grain of salt, but I think it's going to turn out that she needs to stay there for a reason. I'm not saying she's going to be the bad guy, but I'm saying by taking her out of Columbia, the Flying City, that's what's wrong. So you're essentially playing sort of a bad guy by doing your mission of taking her out. I think she needs to be in that city for a reason, and the whole thing is she should be there, and the Songbird's protecting her for a reason. She's not keeping her in, she's keeping you out, and I think that might be the revelation of the game. But I haven't played the game, and of course, it'll be interesting to see if it pans out that way. But I'm so excited for that game.
Yeah, just to add one more thing to that whole thing, you know, Thomas Friedman wrote, you know, like, the world is flat, and you know, it was this whole idea that if you wanted to, you know, sort of, like, bring it down to a nice synopsis, it's, given all the tools that are out there now, if you don't do it, somebody will do it, right? I think that's kind of the whole point of the book, is that it's going to get done one way or the other. So the question is, do you let it happen to you, or are you one of the players that make things happen? And I think that I fully encourage, I mean, I love it when girls join the video game club at school. I love it to see them playing in Minecraft. I love to see them playing in Portal 2. I'm always encouraging people to get involved, not just girls, but any demographic, like whether it's, you know, kids who don't speak English, whatever it is, because they're going to bring something unique to the game. So I think that there's never been a better time in the world that I can remember ever where it's so easy to make games and it's so easy to get involved in game making. So I think that there are definitely tons of women out there that are in the business already, and I think that, you know, the fact that we don't know their names is a problem. I think that's definitely something to notice. But I mean, then maybe that's something that Anita could talk about too one day. She'd be like, these are all these great women that are making games. These are all these great women involved in the industry. These are all these great coders and programmers. How do we not know about these? Let's spotlight these women, you know, and get their names out there. So I think that, you know, as you say, like if you're not happy with the way things are going, it's a good time to get involved and there's definitely room for growth.
For sure. It's a hot-button topic, and one that we'll definitely try to revisit sometime in the future when she releases more of these videos.
Main topic.
Next, we're going to talk about... we're going to keep our main topic a little light today, but we are going to talk about SimCity, how... We'd already talked about some of the things we liked and disliked about the game earlier in the show, but now we're going to talk about its launch and how it's been hindered and basically broken because of DRM in-game. DRM, Digital Rights Management, is there for... So you don't... It's basically to combat piracy. So it was instituted in SimCity and basically makes you have an always online connection. So, A, this serves twofold. One is you have to be online to connect to a server to play the game. And two is, while you're playing the game, if the internet drops, there is a possibility of you lose. I remember I played it, and I lost about an hour of work because the servers didn't sync my progress, which sucked. But, yeah, so I just want to talk to you about SimCity's disastrous launch, as well as DRM as an anti-piracy measure. So, Will, you seem like you're super adamant about the topic, so we'll start with you first.
Right. Okay, I guess the one thing that a lot of people aren't looking at is not necessarily just the server problems, which by itself it's a huge issue, because I feel like EA should have been better prepared for this, for such a launch like SimCity, since we haven't really seen an entry in a while. But I feel like one of the biggest problems here is, and I addressed it in the post that I made, it's in the lack of transparency that EA had. They didn't tell the players. I mean, all right, I'll ask, like, has anyone played SimCity recently enough? I mean, you've played it yourself. Tell me, has there been, did EA send out a message or something saying, hey, you know, this is exactly what's going on. You know, we're sorry you're having problems. You know, apologies. Did you see a message like that?
Yes, and actually today on their Twitter, they handled it really well and with class, talking about, hey, this is what's happening. You know, these are the things that are happening. We're super sorry about it. But they also talk a little backhand, too, because they said no offline mode is in the foreseeable future. But it's something we're going to continue to strive. That was their big tweet, right? Yeah, big tweet. It's something we're looking at to help consumer effort or something weird like that. And they're offering a free game, which you probably can't even access because the servers will be down.
No, they said look out for it on March 18th or something. They haven't released anything more about it yet, but they did say there will be choices. That's all they said.
SimCity 4.
Which pause and clause.
Pause and clause.
But yeah, I just feel like when the problems first began, I feel like they knew what was going on. I feel like they should have actually said something even the day of, like, hey guys, like just a quick Twitter message. That's all it takes. It's like, hey guys, we're experiencing server problems. Sorry if you're experiencing this on SimCity. We're trying to get it fixed as soon as possible. That's all it takes. I feel like they waited just a little bit too long for this, and they are addressing it now, and kudos to them for addressing it in a professional manner, and I have no problem with that. I applaud that, but I feel like they should have done that from the onset.
Not to defend EA, but it's always tough when you have a launch of a game that is server-based, because no matter how much playtesting you do, you can never anticipate the load that you're going to get on launch. And there were a lot of people that tried to play the game on launch. So the same thing happened with Diablo and Blizzard 3. Diablo 3 and Blizzard. You know, when that game came out, Error 37 screwed almost everybody over, I knew, because they weren't able to get onto the game and play it. So, I mean, for that issue, I don't want to defend them. I think they should have had even more servers. You know, I always have a thing is more is better than less. So I'd rather have 100 extra servers and then slowly get rid of them than have an under number of servers and people not be able to get on.
And I think that obviously goes into the whole issue of DRM, whether you should always be connected to play a game. And I personally feel like that's bullshit, because even though it's 2013, not everyone has a modern-day broadband connection. And I don't think it's fair to them to say, hey, you know, in order to play this game, you always have to be connected, you always have to be online. And they always sugarcoat it by saying, hey, you're always connected to your friends, you're always connected to all these people, where I just feel like there should always be a mode where you should just play by yourself and nothing interferes with that. Yeah. I mean, not everyone has the blessing of a broadband connection. We do, obviously, because we have Skype and we're using it properly. But not everyone can say that, unfortunately. And I don't think it's fair to them at all to say, you have to be online to play this game. If not, you can't play it.
Yeah,
I don't think that's fair.
Alex, what are your thoughts on this? Sir. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I'm going to jump to Alex.
No, go ahead.
Well, I already talked a little bit about it in my opening segment. But, like, the thing is that, like, I agree with Will or Rob, but the thing is that, like, I think EA was too late on saying sorry, because I think they should have refunded people that were day one buyers or pre-ordered the game, because as you kind of heard that, like, they're not accepting refunds for Origin, or they're not giving refunds. So the thing is, yeah. So the thing is, like, even Amazon has stopped, selling the game, which is kind of, like, you know, kind of showing you something. So for me, like, on all fronts, like, EA is kind of drop the ball. Even like they sent out a memo to their marquee teams, like, do not talk about SimCity anymore. So you could tell that, like, maybe it was a marketing failure. Maybe it was that way, but like the online DRM, like, I do not have a problem with DRM. I really don't, because I really do think they're trying to grandfather it in. Like, yeah, like SimCity right now is having problems, but like, let's say like a year or two from now, when I thought that EA was going to learn from Blizzard. Well, guess not. But like, I thought that like we as gamers would like get used to the idea of online DRM. Just like we got used to Xbox Live, we got used to having online. Like, remember how I think at one time we used to be against having our stuff being played on online multiplayer. I think we were at once. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I wasn't. But like, that's what Halo was. But when I say grandfather in, I mean like the next generation is going to be playing games on DRM, not on the single player. So I think the death of the single player is going to be gone.
I agree, sort of, Alex, because we don't really, I mean, I'm not a big fan of DRM. I feel like if you want to play a single-player experience, you shouldn't have to connect to the internet to do it. But Xbox has been doing it almost since day one. When you buy an Xbox Live Arcade title, you have to be on the internet to get it onto your console, which means unless I go with my profile to another Xbox, well, they've made it this a lot easier where I don't even have to put my profile to a USB key. I can just get it from the cloud. But if I don't put my profile on another Xbox, I can't play Castle Crashers on my friend's Xbox. I can't do that. Again?
See, I think the best comparison right now is Steam. Because Steam has everything up in the cloud. You can download it from any computer, and it is yours. So, I mean, like, that's what Origin's trying to do.
But you can play those games offline.
See, that's where my argument fails. But like, let me just ask you, like, how did you play Skyrim? Did you through disc or was it through download?
I downloaded it. Yeah.
See, that's my point. Like,
I download all my games. I don't think I've purchased a game. I can't remember the last time I actually purchased a disc.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the same with me. Like, rarely do I get a disc. Like, I haven't even walked into GameStop
Again, though, my question is, I download Skyrim. I'm playing Skyrim. When I lived in college, a lot of times, the house I lived in, the internet would go down. So if I'm playing, I can download Skyrim just fine, but then it would irk me if I'm playing Skyrim and my internet goes down, I can't play Skyrim anymore.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you that I don't, this console generation, it's not, because like Will said, broadband or fast enough internet is not in enough households. And only, again, I use this number, 75% of Xboxes are connected to the internet. So that's still 1/4 of Xbox population that's not. So I think the next console generation, so the PS5s and the Xbox 1080s, will be completely digital. So I'm not arguing that point. I'm just arguing the fact that I have to be online to play the game. Just to counter Will's argument, though, the internet does not have to be very good to play online. I've played Diablo 3 on a plane before. So the internet there, it doesn't have to be incredible. How? And it worked fine. You know, they have the onboard Wi-Fi now. And I got on and I was able to play it okay. You know, it wasn't bad or laggy or anything. So, and you use Skype as an example too, but Skype is great with broadband usage. I mean, you can set the broadband that you want to use to it. So, like, if you set it to high, the calls are going to be a lot clearer. But they have it offered for phones, and you can do it respectably over a 3G connection. So, as we get farther down the road and into the future, I think, you know, people with satellite internet or even possibly 4G internet could be able to play these games. But it's the fact that you have to have this connection is what irks me.
Well, I'll give you that, because you just have to be connected. You don't actually lean on the connection itself. But when we're talking about the future here, since we're almost talking about the future here, what about streaming games?
Yeah, you're going to have an internet connection for that.
And you're going to
future with that. That was the future with Gaikai, right? Well, that's what
PS4 is all about.
I mean, if we're going to talk about the future here, look how well OnLive did.
Well, OnLive didn't do well.
Yeah, like it went under. Because of the connections for people aren't great.
Yeah, I'm gonna let Teach jump in here and talk a little bit.
Oh no, it's just adding on. There's nothing. I don't want to take it in too much of a different direction, but I think that is that if I think that U.S. like the, you know, like if you're talking about the U.S. and you're talking about countries like the U.K. or if you're talking about like where I'm from, Singapore, or Korea, Japan. I mean, the internet's very strong in these countries, right? I think that the fastest internet connection in the world is now in Korea or South Korea. But there are a lot of countries in the world and a lot of places that their internet connection is not so strong, right? And I think that by saying, okay, well, it's going to be internet connection only, you're sort of, what's the word? I guess you're marginalizing a huge percentage of people that don't have access to the internet. And I mean, as an educator who uses technology, I think this is one of the sort of, you know, one of the sort of causes that I kind of want to be involved with more is, you know, getting countries and places that are not, that don't have access, getting them more connected, places like India and Africa. I mean, that has to happen at some point. But I think that, I'm not totally against it. I think it's fine. I mean, I buy all my games, almost everything through Steam. The only things I don't buy through Steam are the limited edition stuff. So like Bioshock Infinite, I had to purchase that especially because it's got the, you know, the statues and all that kind of stuff that I collect. And Far Cry 3 as well. I got that limited edition from Australia. So, you know, those are the only two games I think that I'll have on disc in the last 6 months. But another thing is, you know, talking about EA not getting prepared, I mean, it's not a big surprise that EA, how do they not know that they don't have a good reputation? They do put out some good games, and they have great people, and they're partnered with some great game companies. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, geez, it's not a big surprise that their name is mud right now, right? It's been that way for a long time. So knowing that this release was coming out, knowing that they had pre-orders, right? I mean, they had a ton of people that had pre-ordered the game. That should have given them some kind of indication as to what kind of numbers they're going to get. And they could have. I mean, it's not like they couldn't pay some guy to do the statistics on it and say, okay, well, we can forecast that if you've sold this many, we can forecast that this is going to be the case based on these other sales that we've looked at from Steam and Valve and all these other companies. They should have known that this is going to be the case. They should have had an idea that this is the amount of people that are going to be online, and they should have been able to stress test their servers or they should have been able to do something that this experience didn't happen. There's no excuse for this kind of thing in technology. I mean, if you go to a conference, the Wi-Fi should be working. Everybody should be able to connect. If it doesn't work, people are all up in arms. I'm just thinking, like, if I went to an Apple conference or something like that, if the Wi-Fi didn't work, people would be all over them. Yeah. People would just be like, what do you mean it doesn't work? What do you mean I can't connect to the internet? So, what, you know, like, it's just a given. So I don't understand how this happened. For me, it's inexcusable. For a company that big with that much money, they should have really – there's no way that this should have happened. I don't find an excuse for it at all.
You're completely right, but like this whole problem about online DRM could have been solved if, like we were talking about with Steam, where you can still play your games offline. If they allowed you could just to play the game offline. If that was, I mean, like you have the, if they have like a small asset where you can just check that the game's yours, that was it. Like you can just play the game offline. This whole fiasco would just be going away. We wouldn't be talking about it. We would just be like,
yeah, exactly.
But like the problem is that like they wanted to restrict DRM or they wanted to restrict piracy, which by arm it really isn't a big deal. It's just, well, they want to make sure they get every dollar they can.
Sure, but I mean, Steam does it. I mean, Steam is. Like they're responsible for 70 or 75% of the entire game distribution in the world, right? They are responsible for tons of games getting out there, and they seem to do it. For PCs, yeah, for PCs, yeah. But you know, but they put tons of stuff out, and they have great sales, and companies are still making money with them. But here's the tweet. I'm just looking at this right now. The tweet from SimCity says, "We have no intention of offlining SimCity anytime soon, but we'll look into that as part of our earning your trust back efforts." Yeah, but I mean, come on, that should have been before. They should have been earning people's trust back before SimCity. Like the SimCity launch was their effort. It was their, they had their chance, right? You were supposed to be the chosen one. You know, it was that was the game that they could have done it with. Everybody be like, you know what, good guy EA. You know, like they launched SimCity and it worked.
you know EA launched Star Wars: The Old Republic 2 years ago. They did extensive beta testing. They did probably the most beta testing I've ever seen for an MMO. And, like, it worked on day one, one of the best MMO launches. So when I came into SimCity, I thought, okay, they got this plan. They got
how many servers running. This should have been like one of the best launches because, I mean, they know what they're doing. But obviously, they didn't beta test it enough because, like, I remember they only did like an hour session, like maybe once a weekend. So, I mean, they didn't really foolproof this plan. They needed to. I have a feeling they wanted to take a loss in the beginning so that when people came back to SimCity, that the game would probably be working and they'd probably be like structured, you know. The Guazoo, but to me, like, I don't know how they fucked up this way.
Again, though, it's kind of tough. Again, not defending EA, but it's like, if you're gonna have, we'll go with the school analogy because for Teach, but if you're gonna have an assembly,
of course,
and at the beginning you just have a classroom and you say, hey, these 30 kids, you know, even if it's for an hour, come to the gym because we're gonna talk to you. So you do that for a couple weeks. But then finally, you say at once, every classroom in the school, get out of your room and come to the assembly right now. There's no way you're going to be able to do that in a civ. You know, hopefully you can plan for that, but just the chaos that's represented by having so many people online at once or coming to the gym at once, this is what happened to EA. They can beta test it as much as they want, but so many people jumped onto their servers that they weren't prepared. And that goes back to my thing where I'm like, hey, you definitely should have more servers than less servers, because I took a screenshot and it's hilarious. My friend was playing and it cues you and it said, you have 300 minutes before you have to get to play, which is ridiculous. I don't know. It's just rough. But it's an interesting topic. I mean, DRM is a super heavy-hitting topic in the industry because piracy is such a big... Because piracy is such a big thing, so...
Yeah, it's a huge thing. I was talking... When I did a workshop yesterday for a bunch of students, and it was on video games in the classroom, and... And they were looking at my Steam account, and it was up on the screen, and it says 259 titles, and they were laughing. They're like, "Oh my god, did you buy all those?" I was like, "Yeah, I totally did." And they're like, "I said, but I'm not married and I don't have any kids. That's why I can afford it." And then, but they were laughing. And then this one kid's like, "I don't think I've ever bought a game." And I said, "What do? You just download your games?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, "Okay, fair enough." Like, you know, but then that's the moral choice, right? I mean, that's just how he does it, right? Yeah, he wants to play the game. He's just gonna download it. He's not gonna.
Scary part is, I mean, people. Hackers will probably find a way to get SimCity offline, like through a crack or something.
And guaranteed.
Yeah, throw it up as a torrent in a week or two. And you know, sometimes
there's even Diablo 3 torrent servers. So no matter what, you can't stop piracy.
Oh no, never.
You're just alienating your hardcore base, who is going to pick up your game day one, who are your loyal audience, and is your goodwill, and you're just screwing it over in every way.
Agreed. And it sucks because SimCity, I really wanted to be good. The game has its flaws, but overall is a great game. And as Alex said, and he's revering it, he loves it. I love it. And you look at sites, though, this is such a hot button issue. Like, sites like Polygon originally gave the game a 9, then they updated and gave it an 8, and now it's sitting at a 4.0 because of these server issues, because they can't get in and play it anymore. And, I mean, that's for another issue, discussion about reviews and stuff. But it's just an interesting topic, and one that will be talked about for weeks to come. So,
let's hope that people learn from it, too. Like, let's really hope that there's some learning that's happening here. You know, like, if it's not just EA, it's any game companies. Let's hope that people actually, like, we don't want to make the SimCity mistake.
Fool me once, right?
New releases.
Now we're going to... quickly run through this week in games, and I just want a yay or nay from the two of you guys about these games. Whether, you know, an excitement factor or whether you don't even care. Coming out, all these are coming out Tuesday. Well, Darkstalkers is Wednesday, but God of War Ascension, yay or nay? Alex?
Nay, I don't give a shit.
Rob?
Nay, I never got into the series.
Yay for me. I've heard some bad things about it, but I'll play it because I don't mind those hack and slash games. Sniper Ghost Warrior 2. Yay or nay, Alex?
Actually, yay.
There's been some interesting trailers.
I don't know why. Like, I'm actually interested. I have a couple people.
Be interested. There's been some interesting videos on it.
I actually have a couple people, actually reviewing it. Like, every time they tell me, it's actually better than it should be. It's, one of those games that, the original Darksiders, it has, one of the worst, graphics, but, its art style is amazing.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Just, envision Sniper 2, it has, one of the worst, gameplay setups, but, the gameplay is actually somewhat good.
And honestly, to me, when you look at video games, an element of it is graphics, but for me, if a game plays well, I don't care about anything else. I just want an enjoyable experience.
I'm just going to say right now, it's probably going to get, a 7, 7.5.
Dude, and it comes back, we'll have a discussion on this, but it comes back to people's philosophies that a 7... 7.5 equates it to being a bad game. A 7, mm-hmm. 7.5 is a good game. It's an above average game. Play that game. It might not be a buy. It might not be a, hey, when we look back at the best games of this generation, Sniper Ghost Warrior 2's on there, but it's going to be an enjoyable game that you will get through and play, you know? So, Rob, yay, sure. Yay, Sniper Ghost Warrior 2.
Yay, yeah, definitely a yay. I'll give it a try. It's, I mean, I love sniping games. I love that patience you have to take, and I mean, I really liked, Sniper, what was it, V2, like the one that came out. I like that as well, and so, yeah, I'm yay.
I'm yaying it too. Next game. This is, it's scary when this one could possibly be the biggest one when, God of War is such a money grabbing franchise, but StarCraft II Heart of the Swarm. This is the first expansion pack for StarCraft II Wings of Liberty that came out a couple weeks ago. Alex, yay or nay?
Super yay. I'm getting it on Monday, but I cannot wait. I really do hope that, yeah. like the campaign in StarCraft II was actually phenomenal for so RTS. So I can't wait for what they're going to do with how they're going to tell the story, how they're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Rob?
Yeah. Oh, huge yay. Yeah, I love the StarCrafts. I was in Singapore when they had the big launch, and I don't know if you know about how they release games in Asia, but it was insane. There were people lined up for days beforehand to get their first copy. The guy who got the first copy had waited 11 years. He was crying. He was in the newspaper with the crying in his hands. Wow. I got the T-shirt and all the all the stuff. It's awesome. I mean, and StarCraft II, or for the Heart of the Swarm. I can't wait to see. I can't wait to see it. I'm really looking forward to it. Another very dominant female character too. So there you go.
Yeah, Kerrigan. Yay for me. I want another RTS game. Echoing Alex, I love the story in the StarCraft games, and it always saddens me that the best cinematics are in games that have the least technical action, because even though RTS has a lot of stuff going on, it's not like a Uncharted where things are exploding. It's more tactical.
You're talking about how the blur trailers look, when Star Wars The Old Republic was announced. Yeah, they had that trailer for it when the Sith invaded the Coruscant.
The worst part about StarCraft 2 is I actually have it right now, Heart of the Swarm, but the servers and Battle.net won't even let you play it until that Monday. So yeah, it's just staring at a box, which sucks.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten the code yet, so it should be interesting.
And then finally, I threw this one on there because, I played these games when they were in the arcade back in the day, but Darkstalkers Resurrection, it's a compilation that includes Darkstalkers 2 and 3. For those of you who don't know, it's a 2D fighting game. Some of the characters went on to be in Marvel vs. Capcom, Felicia, and Morrigan, and stuff like that, and BB Hood. So, an interesting fighting game. I like fighting games, so yay for me. Alex, any interest?
Is it on the Vita?
it might come out on Vita, but no, it's Xbox Live and PSN.
Yeah. I have no interest.
Robbie?
No, not at all. Perfect. No interest at all.
Yeah, so those are the games coming out this week. I mean, again, a good variety of games between a hack and slash, a fighting game, a first-person shooter, and an RTS. That's if any genre that you like, something fits your fancy this week, which is awesome. And it just continues the big week of March, because March has, Gears of War is coming out next week. The week after that's Infinite. So we want to end last week. We told you guys to write in some user questions, and we have a user question from Rec Filming. And he asked, do you think Battlefield 4 will go back to its quote-unquote game roots? I want to ask Alex, do you think Battlefield 4 will go back to its game roots?
I'm just going to say, like, my favorite parts of Battlefield have always been, like, the large-scale maps and, like, the countless players that, like, that they put on the map. So I'm kind of confused, like, on the question itself, because Battlefield 3 had 64 players, and even though the maps were small, I felt like you could move around and you could do it. So if, let's just say, like, the next Battlefield 4 is, like, let's say the maps are 2 times big and you can move around New York-sized, like, I think that would be, like, the next edition that I would want. But, like, I don't know. Like, for me, that's what I want.
Okay. Rob, do you think Battlefield 4 can get back to its game roots?
What are the game roots? Is it just the large maps, as Alex was saying?
Yeah,
well,
like,
I guess it's, like, what is your definition of game roots for a Battlefield game? Because that's what the question says, is, you know, it is a very vague question, but I guess it's what game roots for the Battlefield franchise mean to you. For Alex, it means the multiplayer maps.
Yeah, I guess so. If it's for the multiplayer maps, then for sure. I mean, that was one of the things I loved the most about it, was these huge, huge maps and tons of people that could get involved. So I'm really looking forward to seeing some dinosaurs. I mean, that's not roots at all. And that's sort of like anti-evolution. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that if that comes up.
That would be
now,
cool.
Now I know this is like a side topic, but since EA kind of like leaked out Battlefield 4, like they had like that picture that's been everywhere. But there's supposed to be a Battlefield 4 announcement during GDC. So, and I bet you, this is going to be like my big prediction, is that during GDC week, they're going to announce free-to-play is going to be in Battlefield 4. And I'm going to say that's going to be what kills Battlefield. Like,
a free-to-play model?
Yeah, free-to-play.
Well, they already have Battlefield free-to-play, which is just like a PC version of the game.
Yeah, but it's not like...
making Battlefield 4 free-to-play would be interesting.
Yeah, but for me, that's like... PlanetSide 2 has been doing all right, but it hasn't been, like, a phenomenal, like, phenom. And for me, that, like, EA has kind of stated that every game from now on is going to have microtransactions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of looking at Battlefield as that. Like, are they really going to go down that route as making that free-to-play?
Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, they have the technology to do it, especially with the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 3, because there are free-to-play games already on the PS3, for those of you who don't know, like DC Universe and Dust 514, so it'll be interesting. For me, what, going back to its game roots, is just, I want to echo your sentiments on multiplayer, because when I played Battlefield 2, I was living in Arizona, and I used to go to a cyber cafe. I don't even know if those exist anymore. But my friend and I would go to a cyber cafe,
play
these overpowered machines, and we'd just sit there and buy the all-day pass and play Battlefield 2, you know, that one city map. And it's just so much fun, you know, with the classes. And for some reason, maybe it was because I played on the consoles, maybe because technology, you know, things have changed where, you know, I'm able to just sit down and play in my living room instead of going to one of these places. I didn't really...
Battlefield 3 on the consoles was probably the most disappointing game from 2012. Or 2011, I think it was, when it came out.
Yeah, and it just didn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
So when talks about getting back to the game roots, I hope it's goes back. You know, I just want it to give me a sense of wonderment that I got when I played Battlefield 2. And I agree, I don't want to download a 2 GB HD texture pack when I pop in Battlefield 3 for my Xbox. You know, I want, if you're going to put a story in, you failed with Battlefield 3, you failed with Metal Gear Honor Warfighter. So if you're going to put a story in, at least make it more enjoyable than you have with these last two entries. Because Call of Duty games, take them what they are, but their stories aren't great either. But you can get through Call of Duty Black Ops 2 story a lot easier than I got through Battlefield 3 story. And maybe it's because just the production values were a lot tighter, I felt, on Call of Duty. So if you go in story, make it a tight story, one that you actually enjoy. And if you, for the multiplayer, I just say, you know, do something that hasn't been done before, you know. Keep the Battlefield name, but get us excited. You know, if there are people that still play your game, the end game DLC for your game's out, and people are enjoying that too, and you have such a fan base, a huge fan base, especially the people listening to this podcast. Pixel Enemy is probably one of your biggest fan bases, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Battlefield 4. So that's what I want to ask you, Pixel Nation, is what do you think we'll see from Battlefield 4? Whether it's single-player thoughts, multiplayer thoughts, or just any thoughts about the game in general. So tweet us at Pixel Enemy and give us your thoughts on what we'll see at Battlefield 4. And again, ask us user questions, and we'll answer them on the show, because if you get your question answered on the show, you can win some cool, nifty stuff. So who doesn't like free stuff? So that's it for our week. A great show. I want to thank all my guests. You know, we're talking about these broadband connections, but, you know, apparently some of our guests dropped due to lack of connection. So, you know, the final barrage we have here are Alex M. and Rob Teach, are the champions. So I just want to thank you guys for joining me.
Mm-hmm. No, thanks for having me. It's great. Yeah. I have a suggestion for the future for these podcasts. Is that I've listened today, and well, of course I was listening. It was part of it. But I mean, Alex has made 3 predictions during this podcast. I feel like this is his thing, right? Like, I think maybe we should have Alex's weekly prediction, and we should write these down and we should see what actually, yeah, like how podcast. Close he is, because I feel like he kind of knows what he's talking about. Actually, like, he really knows what he's talking about. So I'd be really curious. We should start logging these.
What were my predictions? Like, I have one on free to play, and then I have the other 3.
You predicted that Ghost? Yeah, 7.5 or something like that. Yeah, for that. And there was another one you predicted something else.
I think I predicted that SimCity was like I think I said something about SimCity. I think I only said 2, but
well, audience, you'll just have to go and find it and listen to the podcast and find Alex's first prediction.
You can just tweet it at me.
So tweet it to us. Again, thank you guys for listening. Follow us on all social media at Pixel Enemy. Like the Facebook page, you'll get all the updates. You know, we have a great staff, and we're writing some really interesting stuff. Also, visit the site, pixelenemy.com. Watch the YouTube videos, and enjoy your week, because, like we said, no matter what genre you like, there is a game for you if you want to pick something up. So thank you guys for listening, and have a fantastic week.